Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Adele Paulo Royce. She is author of The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes. Suicide should never be taken lightly. According to the latest research, it's the 10th leading cause of death in the United States and has caused immeasurable pain and suffering to families around the world. In her debut novel, The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes, Adele presents a semi-fictional look inside the mind and heart of a tortured soul who is on the verge of ending her own life. Through this raw and authentic journey into the heart of darkness, Adele shines a unique light on the human experience that leaves you more inspired to live life to the fullest. One part suicide journey, one part suicidal memoir, Adele's novel is really a tale of for life, death, and rebirth. She draws upon her own rich history of spiritual practice and inquiry to look at suicide from the deepest possible level. In doing so, she uses her character to show us how to live by showing us how not to live. And by going into the deepest darkness, she finds a different kind of light at the end of the tunnel than she expected. Her book is available from Amazon.com, and I have a direct link to her book there in the show page description. And you can also find out more by visiting her website, which is AdelePaulaRoyce.com. And I also have a link to that website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Adele to the show. Good day, Adele.
Hi, Robert. Thank you so much for having me on. It's truly a pleasure to bring this out to the world.
Yes, it is my pleasure. And, you know, over the last 6 years that I've done this show, I think I've had probably maybe four shows that have dealt with suicide. And, you know, and it's really... and that's not a lot when I think about it. I sit back and I think about, you know, I've had over 1,000 shows. I'm thinking, you know, this is a topic I really need to focus on. But you know, it's just one of those things where it's a tough subject. As a matter of fact, I had I'm visiting someone right now, and just before the show, she says, "Oh, what's your show about?" And I said, "Well, it's about a book called The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes." Ooh, I thought, you know, I'm sure that's a reaction that many would have. And so anyway, I'm really glad that we're going to be able to talk about your book. It's a unique book. But first of all, before we start, since this is Bringing Inspiration to Earth, what inspired you to write this particular book?
Well, you know, it's very, very interesting. I would have to say that, you know, I wanted to share my story with the world. You know, a lot of people who are suffering, you know, I wanted them to know that there's still hope. Because actually, after years and years of spiritual searching on my own part, you know, I had a very unique realization that there is basically, and don't take this the wrong way, there is no cure for suffering. You know, it's basically innate. It's inherent to the human condition. And I felt that I kind of needed to tell it in a way that would take the pressure off of people to find a solution that doesn't really exist. You know, so through the story of this protagonist, you can follow her through the process of realizing that suffering is inherent to existence and how she comes to terms with it. You know, it's paradoxical, but the key insight here is that although human suffering is innate, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. The suicidal tendency is based on a feeling of hopelessness And the feeling of really not being able to experience anything beyond that feeling of hopelessness. And it's been my experience that once you realize what's really going on here in life, you can then begin to have more of a handle on how to relate to it and make peace with that truth.
Yeah. Well, you know, the idea that there is no real solution to suffering, in the sense that, I mean, like you say, it's an innate part of the human condition. That in itself, I would think, would take a lot of pressure off of people who are, you know, having a difficult time, feeling that bit of suffering.
Yes, no question about it. Because what invariably happens, Robert, is that, people come to an end point, and that end point doesn't necessarily have to be an end point. That could be a spring off point for a beginning. And that's in essence what this story is about. It's really about a life, death, rebirth experience. It's about going through all of the trials and tribulations of life that we basically all go through. You know, this particular subject, unfortunately, but, it is what it is and not what we all think it should be, is basically a taboo subject in society. And it needs to be brought to the forefront. In my observation, it's been kind of kicked to the side, and it's in epidemic proportions. You know, I have statistics in the book, not to get too involved in, the nature of it right now, but it is growing in epidemic proportions. I mean, I believe the newest statistic is either, I have in the audio book, which is coming out shortly as well, which I actually do the performance on. You know, they always say, it was Bob Dylan's quote, actually. He knew how his songs were to be sung. I knew how I wanted these notes to be read.
Right.
So I did the performance myself. But basically, you're looking at something that it's bringing light to an otherwise very dark, dismal corner of existence. And I think my point was that the newest statistic, the audio book was done a little prior to the actual finalization of the written word. So the audio book, I believe, had every 14 minutes. And the written word, I believe, was 12. So if you just look at your clock or just time your kitchen egg timer and set it for 12 or 14 minutes, or let's just break it in between for 13, someone is committing suicide. And the demographics are mind-blowing. I mean, I myself, have done a lot of research on this and find the demographics of children, there is no age limit to this. Someone 103 could decide to do it, but the demographics on the lower end of the spectrum of children, 10 to 13, 13 to 15, it's hard to really wrap your arms around something like that. And I believe that the intent is the more we speak about it, the more we kind of dismiss the idea of the guilt and the shame that goes along with all of this. I think the more conversations that are had, I think the better off we're all going to be. And I really truly hope this was a very humble gesture on my part to bring, a spark of light into a fairly interestingly dark existence.
Yeah, it is, it is that. I mean, for the longest time, it has been very much a taboo subject. It is one that quite often people don't really like to talk about. And it's like you say, with today's youth, it is just it's just gotten crazy. And I guess, the raising the awareness, having it be out in the open, and destigmatizing it, that I think in itself will, don't you think that would be very cathartic and possibly help
no
change the course
about it.
Of things?
Yeah, I agree with that in full. You know, it comes down to, in many essences, you know, people ask me, you know, they say, you point out in the book, you know, you say in the book that it's meant to show how to have people live rather than showing them how not to live. You know, what exactly do you mean by that? And I think that that's a very poignant question, and I think it deserves a really, you know, solid answer. And I think that many of us live in what I call a state of false emergency. And that state of emergency, you know, is basically reacting, Robert, to something that feels real, but it's not in essence true. You know, my teacher, my spiritual teacher, would always give two examples, which I, you know, believe make the point very well. You know, one true state of emergency could be, say, if someone were pointing a gun to your head, okay, ready to pull the trigger, real emergency, true emergency. Another might be, say, you know, if a grizzly bear were coming toward you and ready to attack, okay? Now, those are true emergencies, if that's a life or death situation. However, when one is full of fear and anxiety, even though they aren't actual, you know, actually under, say, any kind of a real threat, so to speak, you know, it may feel very real to the one experiencing it, but by no means is this true. So through this woman's story, you know, you can learn that you don't have to live this way, and how that realization can result in living a more balanced, equanimous, sane, and simpler life.
Yeah. Well, the, you know, the idea of kind of teaching how to live through looking at how to die.
You know, I mean, there's an old Sufi saying, die many times before you die, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, but, you know, and you know, the idea of the reality of suffering, you know, I think that was, you know, I mean, you make a really good point, and with that particular teacher, and the idea of what is, you know, truly, you know, a life or death situation, and then and those that aren't. And but I think one of the mistakes that some people make, is, you know, for in regard to someone who is suicidal or depressed or, you know, or experiencing their suffering, is to try and minimize it.
I think that's an excellent, excellent point, and I'm really glad that you brought that up, because there is a misperception of suicide. And I would say, you know, to that point, that the most common misperception about suicide in this society, and it's very well versed in the book, the associated elements of craziness or insanity about it. Actually, Dr. Gerald Epstein, you know, a famous medical doctor and spiritual teacher, wrote the foreword to this book, and he emphasized that as well. You know, he started his career as a psychoanalyst, and in 1974 switched over to an entirely new way of looking at the human condition, you know, via mental imagery, you know, which is the gentleman that I happen to study under. And, you know, in the foreword, he made an incredible point that the associated element of craziness or insanity about it, well, guess what? They're not crazy. You know, I mean, basically, in the author's notes section of the book, you know, some of the brightest minds of our times committed suicide. You know, there are so many complex issues. It's not just spiritual. It's guilt. It's shame. It's, you know, there's mental aspects of it. There's a state of hopelessness, feeling that there's nothing to live for, you know. And it's the stigmatism that the suicidal feeling means, just to your point, that there's something wrong with you. You know, my book is trying to show people that that's not the case. You know, there could be mental illness, brain chemistry, family life. I mean, you can just go the gamut. Social structure, you know, and this is basically delving in to explore, because I wanted to do it this way, to explore the spiritual and moral dimensions, which are often overlooked by our society. You know, it's basically a state of hopelessness, but I mean, it's all about your internal freedom, you know, and its power. If you, let's say, take Viktor Frankl, okay, the doctor who was in the concentration camps. I mean, I read his books. It was mind-blowing, you know, and he explained that the only thing his captors could not take away from him was his internal freedom. And that freedom, you know, is not something you can surgically remove. And the book is about finding a path to one's own internal freedom.
Yeah, you know, that's, and that's the way out, or the path toward moving away from the edge, you know.
Right.
And in reality, we, every day, you know, we, I think it was your book talked about, you know, experience a light form of suicide, you know, with self-destructive behavior. Some of the folks, you know, who you know, engage in that, you know,
right.
that in itself, you know, can, and, you know, and just, I mean, I know many of people who have had that dark night of the soul, you know, where it gets to that point where we're like, would it be better, you know, would life be better for those around me if, you know, and, you know, but hopefully, you know, there are some people to help, you know, guide them back or show, you know, provide some hope where hopelessness may be. But
right.
But
and,
is,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, in essence, that's what the book is about. You know, you're kind of nailing all the crucial subject matter. I mean, the novel is basically comprised of 27 suicide notes, and it's written by a woman, you know, on a spiritual journey. Again, to your point, from life to death to rebirth, you know, these aren't suicide notes classically left behind. They're a series of reflections, journal entries of a sort that, you know, chart her emotional, spiritual journey as she confronts the question of whether, which was actually Camus' question, of whether life is worth living, you know, and it gives you an intimate look into the experience of hopelessness, as you're mentioning, through her journey, and it highlights her desire and a way, you know, and a way out, because there is a light at the end of this tunnel, if you want to find it. You know, Camus, I really enjoy reading a lot of his work. He's a French philosopher, and it's quoted in the book as well, because I did find it so fascinating and so important, you know, a question. You know, and the question is that there's only one truly philosophical question, whether life is or is not worth living, you know? And if you kind of look at something like this, it's getting to the bottom of life's, or one of life's, or the life's biggest questions, you know, which can be very difficult to explore. You know, it's not an easy thing to do. You need a bit of courage here, you know, but that's what we're trying to do, give everyone some courage to kind of get on that exploration trail. You know, but you can come out of this with some very important information. And I really believe Camus nailed an essential philosophical question. You know, the actual quote from his book of The Myth of Sisyphus explores this Greek mythological figure. I don't know if your audience is familiar, so I'll just kind of brush over it. But, you know, it's about this figure pushing a boulder up and up and up over this hill again and again, trying to reach the top. And every time he came to the top, you know, that boulder came rolling back down, you know, that hill right on him. So basically, you know, our job is kind of to keep moving forward little by little, and maybe one fine day with some of that courage, you know, that boulder makes its way to the top and remains there, you know, but then it's everyone's internal process, you know, to kind of ask, you know, is life more than, you know, pushing a boulder up a hill, you know? So when a person kind of begins this journey inside of themselves, they may be very, very pleasantly surprised as to what they're going to find.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. You know, and now you mentioned that the book is contains 27 suicide notes, and
yes,
you broke it down into three parts. One is the reward of death and old friend benefits.
Yep.
Part two is the Ten Commandments of Suicide, and then part three is final farewell. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, each of the sections and why you put it in that format?
Yes, and well, the deal is this. The book is broken down into three parts, but this is book one, the Little Black Book of Suicide Notes, of a trilogy. So there are two books to follow. This one is going to take you through, you know, basically life, its trials, its tribulations, and some of its misconceptions, you know, and it's basically going to bring you into the next part where book two is going to be called Notes from Beyond, and book three is going to be coming back in a new way, and that's going to be called A Return to This Mortal Coil. So we're going to be all taking a journey together through this book, okay? And getting to the next book, we're going to be going from enslavement to freedom, all right, which is a really interesting approach. You know, the first part, like I said, is about life, its trials and tribulations and misconceptions, which we all have and sometimes don't recognize it. We're not aware of it. You know, it's again getting back to the truth and untruth part. You know, next we're going to go on a journey through death, and we're going to explore with some of the people, very well-known people, who died tragic and intentional deaths by their own hand. And we're going to find out what's beyond, and then in novel form. And then we're going to travel back, which is a subtitle to the first book, Coming Back to Life in a New Way. We're going to come back and write our own scroll and our own life story. And, you know, maybe it's a little intimidating that some people really don't know what that picture of their life looks like yet. But, you know, I would say stay tuned for some very fascinating ideas and experiences coming your way after this first book. Yeah, this was the first one published. Yeah.
Well, keep me in mind when those two come out.
Everybody will be, yes.
I like to have a complete story. Okay. So now, in this one, okay, now this is one of three, book one of three. So within this particular book, again, we have the three parts. So that can you, you know, why the reward of death and the Ten Commandments of Suicide and the final farewell?
Yeah, I think that, you know, being kind of like a spiritual journey, a spiritual death, I think that the first part really kind of takes you through the first 16 notes, the various states of mind that one goes through that might lead them to a point of really questioning, is life worth living? And, you know, the second part, the Ten Commandments of Suicide, I mean, I happen to love the Bible, you know. I mean, I think it's a great piece of wisdom literature, and I really always keep it by my night table to read, you know, when I have the inspiration. You know, sometimes I think it is a great piece of literature. I mean, I wasn't there when they wrote it, you know. It's so I'm not really sure, you know, but in any event, I was very inspired by it. So I wrote each note based on biblical scripture in part two. And, you know, there's a relationship between Bible and the, you know, the gospel and death, you know, life, death, and rebirth right there in that section. And then the third and final section, I'm going to leave to the audience to read for themselves and, you know, really kind of absorb what they're learning from this experience, then I'm hopefully making a nice harmless contribution to humanity. And it will then take them on to the next book, you know, which is in the works. And I think they'll find it quite fascinating read.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners that if you would like to call in and ask Adele any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions you'd like for me to pose to Adele, feel free to type them in. And then when we come back from the break, Adele, if you would mind sharing one of those notes so that the listeners can get a good idea of what's contained in the book, okay?
Yeah, I think that might be fun.
Great. Okay. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hello. This is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide. Books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guests. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Adele Paula Roich, and we're talking about her new book, The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes. Again, her book is available from Amazon.com. There is a direct link to her book there in the show page description. And you can also find out more about Adele and the book by visiting her website, which is AdelePaulaRoich.com. And again, there is a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, we're back, Adele.
Yes.
Okay, great. Before we go on to the excerpt that I have you read, one of the things I really think it's really important to get out there is who is the target group who would really benefit most from your book? Just so listeners have a good idea, if there's someone in their life or they themselves might need it or might, benefit from it, who do you think would benefit most?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And I tell you something, like I said, I have done statistics on demographics, but it's such an epidemic proportions at this point that I believe that anyone feeling any type of hopelessness, I mean, for whatever age point, to whatever age point, I really would be hard-pressed to nail down a demographic, for mm-hmm. this type of subject matter, because it's complex, it deals with many issues that people find themselves in and feel and just don't know how to express. And I think sometimes reading it in an intimate way, even though it's being brought out to the world, doesn't really have anything to do with an age, Unfortunately,
yeah.
I've been hearing so much about a younger audience. We were talking and chatting for a moment before about, 13 to 15. This is mind-blowing to me. But then
yeah.
again, you look at some of our most creative people that are, say in the entertainment industry, not going in detail into any
mm-hmm.
names, but find themselves committing this act, and they're not so young, you know. So
I think
it has to do with the emotional state, the mental state, the complexity of what's going on in one's life at any given point in time, and how they're able or unable to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I agree. You know, it really crosses all the whole spectrum of age, race, you know, both genders. So, I mean, it really isn't specific. And, you know, I think that this would be a great book, like a resource book for those who are in the industry of helping, you know, in the suicide prevention in care industry, you know, for also, you know, not only the young, but, you know, we so often hear about, you know, the veterans and the, you know, they're the outlandish, you know, statistics, you know, for, you know, that percentage, you know, in the high rate.
Yeah, the
you know,
statistics,
those kinds of
I mean,
out.
In the military, basically, you know, suicide is, I mean, the top. It's outranking,
mm-hmm.
you know, combat deaths. I mean, so when you think about something like that, you know, it is, you know, something that people would want to kind of wrap their arms around and see what's going on in the world.
Yeah, exactly. So if you listeners out there have someone who is, you know, falls into those categories or maybe is showing signs of that hopelessness or, you know, some of the warning signs are the hopelessness, withdrawal, recklessness, you know, mood changes. Those are things that I got from the suicidology.org website, which is a really great website.
If
people are kind of experiencing that, definitely get the book, because it's really a book of life, you know.
Yes, it is. It's a book of life, and it's a book of hope, you know, and there are many, many resources for people to tap into. There are suicide hotline prevention organizations, hotline numbers. You know, there are therapists. I was talking to one woman the other day that, you know, practices a combination of psychotherapy and mental imagery. You know, sometimes they incorporate a little different element into their work. And she was saying that she felt it was something that she would highly recommend to her clients because she felt that it was something that would be beneficial for them to read. You know, so when you get that type of, you know, endorsement and, you know, the doctor that actually wrote the foreword, Dr. Gerald Epstein, you know, endorsing a project like this, you know, I would say that there are really solid nuts and bolts, you know, associated with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go ahead and, if you wouldn't mind, share an excerpt from the book, one of the suicide notes.
Yeah, well, this one is actually one that we chose, and it was suicide note number 7. We chose it for the clip on the audiobook. Right now it's out in paperback and an e-version, you know, but it's coming out in an audio book, which I actually performed myself because I knew exactly how I wanted these notes to be read and, you know, brought across to the world. And it's very interesting. The audio book actually has something very interesting and trendsetting in it. It has a version, cover tune by a wonderful artist, Tony Noe, who did the cover for Suicide is Painless from MASH. And when I did the research, it's actually a song in the audiobook. He did it. It was a brilliant suggestion on his part, and a brilliant. It's really lovely when you hear it, and I hope it should be out within the next week or so. Basically, I did some research. You know, I watched the movie MASH again, and I delved into the song a bit, and then I'll get onto the note. But the actual lyrics were written by the director's son, you know, Mike Altman. And he was 14 years old when he wrote the lyrics to Suicide is Painless. And when you listen to the lyrics that a 14-year-old young man wrote, you know, I found that, I mean, jaw-dropping. I really did. and Johnny Mandel actually wrote the music, but, you know, it's a great piece. So I think the audiobook, when it comes out, you know, be on the lookout for it. It's going to be a great piece of work. This is called Suicide Note Number 7, Suicide by Architectural Design. And the notes are basically, I'll just give you a little heads up. I'll read the whole note because, I mean, they run about a page and a half each. It's kind of a nice, easy read. So I think that taking it all the way might be kind of cool.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Number 7, Suicide by Architectural Design. The good Lord said, I'm the way, I'm the light. I say, there's a rock, there's a hard place, there's a devil, and there's a deep blue sea. I'm between it all. I need an interior designer. I need a brilliant architect to work some magic. I need my interior to be demolished, all the ash and debris carted away, freshly plastered with a new coat of white paint. I need someone to redesign me, like a glass house overlooking the Big Sur, high on a promontory jutting out over the sea. The irony? Maybe I need to do nothing. Maybe God'll do it, an act of God. An earthquake, a fire, a tsunami, a tornado, an alien attack. And in the twinkling of an eye, one perishes. I stare out the window, flocks of birds fly by. Boats glide across the river, a city awakes. People moving, going, thinking, doing, being. Me, I observe and wait. Wait for what, you might ask? Me personally, for it all to be over. But in the interest of others, it doesn't really matter what you wait for in life. It's all one big illusion anyway. So it's best to just be patient and wait for absolutely nothing. It's like no one ever tells you the joke's on you. But since you think there's something, it gives you a reason to wait for it. Not me. I've had it. My waiting days are over. It's like playing Monopoly. I'm pass and go, collecting my $200, and getting out of Dodge. I've been told that this whole situation stems from a lack of love. So I did some research and interviewed various entities on their thoughts of finding love. Mom's caretaker told me there are mysteries. Generations of the past may be jealous and don't want me to find love. She said I need to ask them what they want. I need to light a candle. I need to give them some water and prepare a meal for them. Then it'll come to me in a dream. A door will open. Another teacher said, to let the dead be. They have their own issues to deal with. Another teacher said, put a note under your pillow at night, petitioning the higher power to find you love. The astrologer said, it's in the works. Love's approaching. Various shrinks over the years had their own versions of the lack of love syndrome, and not one of them made any sense. Most of them didn't even have a degree to practice an opinion. We used to call them shingle hangers. So what do I say? Give me the strength to find out what's on the other side. This life is a life of mediocrity, and at best a mere travesty. So how can you beat that? I do not fear death. I have been dead for billions of years before I was born, and had not suffered the slightest inconvenience from it. Mark Twain.
Wow, there's so much in that.
That's just
start?
One.
I know it. Well, you know, I think my first impression, you know, is that, you know, the feeling of despair, the futility of it all, you know, those are things that, you know, people who are considering suicide experience. So
right.
I would think that there would be a resonance, you know, in reading that.
No question about it. And what the readers will take away from this, and what I hope they take away from it, is hope with a double exclamation point. You know, to realize that there is a way out other than a destructive one. And once you realize what living an enslaved life is, you can then begin the journey of coming back to life in a brand new way. And it's a great one. It really is. When you find the key to open that door, and we all have it, it's a great life.
Yeah. Well, you know, and with even within that note, you know, there are I could see that hope, you know, in the sense of, you know, of waiting for something. You know, in that in itself, you know, explains that, you know, if you're kind of short now, you know, you might just miss whatever it is that's coming, you know. And that's a good thing. You know, that's, I think that's the one thing that, you know, and it's done in a way that's not pie in the sky, you know what I mean? And I think that's important.
And I think the important thing is, you know, also people ask me, which I think a lot of your viewers might be interested in learning, you know, the question, which is a vulnerable one, how much of it is fact versus fiction? You know, and I think that's a really interesting question because, you know, I would say it's a little bit of both. Because, you know, it's fiction based on life experiences. You know, my teacher used to use this metaphor that was always really interesting to me. I mean, say you're in bed at night dreaming you're in Hawaii, okay? The question then becomes, are you in Hawaii or are you sleeping in your bed? You know, so like a lot of people, I've had my ups and downs and I've struggled at times and I've had my own suffering. But I found a way out, and I really did want to share that with people.
Yeah. I had a gentleman on my show, gosh, years ago. His name is Tim Holmes. He was in Australia. He's now in the UK. But he wrote a book. His book was about surviving abuse as a child, sexual abuse
right.
as a child. And one of the things, he had a term, he coined a term, or had a term, for his book, and he called it faction. We know which was facts wrapped up in fiction, you know, as a story, you know.
Right.
And I bet that's what my Joy Potential book is. I call that, you know, faction, because it is, you know, my story, my journey, you know, with negativity.
That's
or
a great
kind of negativity.
Tagline,
it's great.
Well, it is a little bit of both. I mean, it's a fine line you're walking on, you know. It is a bit vulnerable. But, you know, it is what it is. And I think one of the most interesting things that, you know, is hardest to do, you know, is face the truth. You know, it's not an easy thing to do. You know, there's value in everything. I mean, like I said, Viktor Frankl found it, you know, in a concentration camp. How do you do that?
Yeah.
You know, it's something internal that he found. You know, people go to prison. I mean, I have a friend that does work with, you know, prisoners. And, you know, once they come out of prison, she has a community service that basically tries to keep them out, you know, and not go back into the system. But, you know, conversations with these types of people and realizing, you know, the suffering that people do go through. And all of the trials and tribulations that bring them to a point of hopelessness, you know, it's not an easy thing to reconcile with, but when you realize that you're not alone, you know, the loneliness, I had it in the book as well. It was a quote from Thoreau that, you know, and that's something that might be worth reading as well. You know, I'm just going to do this on a fly, but it's something that is just a few sentences, but it's so poignantly stated. And I'm just trying to, it was in note one. You know, the loneliness is a horrible thing. You know, it was Thoreau who once said, it is easier to sail many thousand miles through cold and storm and cannibals in a government ship with 500 men and boys to assist one than it is to explore the private sea, the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean of one's being alone. You know, so there is something traumatizing about that. And you can be in a crowd, you know, you can walk into an event with 1,000 people and in a glorious dinner, you know, where you're paying money to have this wonderful meal and, you know, honor somebody, and it's a great venue. And you can walk in there and just feel very singular and alone and not part of a crowd. You know, it's not such a great feeling. And it helps homeopathically. You know, it's kind of that homeopathy where like cures like. It's like loneliness cures loneliness. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
misery does like company, unfortunately, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least
yeah.
through my observation, you know, you like to know, and great poetry says it. I mean, if you read Ozymandias or I Am by John Clare, you know, futility and destruction is something that is in front of everyone. But we just kind of shy away from it. You know, someone wrote a review, a really brilliant review of the book on Amazon, and it really touched me, you know, that they shied away from the topic because it scared them. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's scary to think internally that you're feeling this way. But that's what I'm trying to destigmatize. You know,
right.
that fearful feeling that you're not alone, people do understand. You know, sometimes it might be a matter of getting into a like-minded community of people, but
mm-hmm.
there are definitely ways to come out of that type of hopelessness.
Yeah, exactly. Now, one of the things, you know, in reading your book is that you really approach the topic in a non-judgmental way. And it seems that when it comes to suicide, that, you know, judgment really kind of creeps in a lot. You know, there's self-judgment and judgment from others
right.
about, you know, those who commit suicide. So can you maybe talk a little bit about how, you know, your book tries to
tie that into the whole
yeah,
subject.
Tie that in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely. You know, I mean, the past is the past, dead, buried, gone. The future is something that doesn't really exist. I mean, if you take it to the nth degree, it's basically psychoses. You're making up stories of things that don't exist. So what you basically have is the now. You have the moment. It's very difficult to stick in the moment. People are always obsessed with the past. They're always obsessed with the future. And the moment is really all you have, you know. So all of these practices, you know, whether they're therapeutics or whether they're spiritual or, you know, all roads lead to Rome. You can study this from the Eastern philosophies. You can study them from Western, Northern, Southern. I mean, all roads are going to lead to Rome and take you to the same point, whether it's done through meditation or more of a, you know, intellectualized reading, you know, venue. But it's staying centered in the moment where you don't feel, you know, that anxiety and that tension and that fear, you know, that fear that something is going to happen. You know, living that way is not a pretty way to live. And realizing that you don't have to live that way is a very liberating, you know, realization. I guess that's the best word I can use.
Yeah, it is. You know, the one... The few times that I have been touched by someone who has committed suicide, in virtually every case, you know, it seemed that it kind of came out of the blue, you know, that it was one of those things where it just took me by surprise, you know, and I've had a few friends who have had similar experiences. I'm thinking that, you know, many times, you know, one of the myths is that they happen without warning, you know, you know, it seems that, you know, there are signs, but, you know, I'm wondering if maybe, you know, we are kind of blind to those kinds of warning signs, you know, thinking.
You know, I think it's like anything else. I mean, I'm not a doctor. You know, I'm just kind of regular gal. But basically, I have basis on life experiences, and I could say that sometimes there are signs, Sometimes there are no signs. Sometimes it creeps up on you. And sometimes it's so unexpected. And, you know, I mean, we all know, you know, even the Hollywood set, I mean, these unexpected suicides of people that have everything to live for. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when you think of characters like Hemingway, or when you think of characters, famous painters or philosophers or, you know, movie stars, people, young people, musicians that have the
right.
money, that have the fortune, that have the fame, that have the red carpet, the, you know, all of the world, you know, in front of them, and they do themselves in. There really isn't a rhyme or a reason to pin on any one particular situation, or at least that's what I found. I think
yeah.
the situation is so complex that everyone has its own, you know, variable associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
you know, maybe there are signs. Obviously, if somebody's sleeping in bed all day when they could be out, you know, doing something really cool, you know, or they
mm-hmm.
stopped eating
mm-hmm.
because they just have no appetite, I mean, I would, you know, investigate something like that just as not a doctor,
right.
but just as a regular person, knowing that that's not really... you know, kind of in quotes,
yeah.
would you say a natural way of living? I don't say normal, but
mm-hmm.
a natural way of living. You know, so
mm-hmm.
there might be some telltale signs to investigate with someone if you see them on a path that doesn't appear to be a productive one. But
yeah.
I don't think there's any hardcore, fast rules and regulations when it comes to something like this. And I think that it's just a big issue that needs to be faced, you know, and just spoken about. And I think the more we speak about it, and the more we are gentle about it, and the more we don't make people feel like they're nuts or they're crazy for feeling this way, you know, slowly but surely things will change, you know. I mean, things don't change overnight. I mean, but they do change. And that's the hope,
yeah.
that things do change, and they can change in a very positive way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, whenever I have been around those who have committed suicide or friends have experienced it, the one thing that really seems to pop up is that those left behind really examine life and recognize the value of life and have
right.
an appreciation of life, you know. So, we want to go ahead and do that without having to die.
Yeah, you know, it's like they say, one man's pleasure is another's poison. Well, we hope not to get to the poison part, you know.
Right.
But the fact
exactly.
of the matter is that as we explore the, you know, negative sides of the situation, we do tend to find the positive. It's like everything has an opposite. You wouldn't know it's hot unless you knew there was cold. You wouldn't know that it was raining unless you knew about sun, you know? So what I'm saying here is that you wouldn't know light if you didn't know dark. It's just
right.
the way it goes. And some people have more of it than others. And again, it's based on hundreds of different facets of life situations, you know. I mean, you just spoke before about someone who was abused, you know. If you look at Frank Kafka, I mean, if you read some of his stories, you know, the abuse of his father towards him, what it did to his life. You know, so there
yeah.
are many ways that things can happen. But the opposite of that is that there is hope that it could reverse and turn into something other than what it started out to be.
Yeah, yeah. That particular situation, it ended up being his life's purpose. You know, working through that, and you know, the awareness of, you know, sexual abuse against males is one that's not often talked about. So I mean, he, you know, really made it his focus to be open about it and frank and you know, lead groups and seminars. So I mean, it was one of those things where, you know, he could easily have gone down the dark path, you know, and you know, had it you know, ruin his quality of life when you know, he, you know, again, just embraced the situation as being a life purpose. You know,
right.
And I think for a lot of people who are suffering right now, so many times I've seen, I mean, I've had hundreds of shows, literally, where people who have had challenging or very detrimental types of situations in life, and, you know, and it has ended up being a blessing in disguise in a way. You know, either it's helped them spiritually, helped them, you know, live life more full, given them a purpose. You know, there's, you know, they've kind of not let it define them. They define the life, not let that define them.
That's exactly right. And that's the control, the inner freedom that we're speaking of here. You know,
yeah.
I mean, this is typical, you know, and it's a great way to kind of bring some of this to closure is that, you know, you take this beautiful piece of work that is homeopathically looking to, you know, help people. You know, the little black book of suicide notes, and where it was written from, you know, was in essence a fairly dark, hopeless place, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it comes through to the other side, you know. So, yes, sometimes the darkest moments, you know, give way to the brightest stars, and that's what we're trying to do here. That's exactly what
Absolutely.
We're trying to do here.
Well, absolutely. Well, Adele, I really have enjoyed our conversation. I really want to thank you for your time. I've really enjoyed it. It's good, and I think that we, you know, the conversation and your book are going to be very important in helping, you know, brighten the day of a lot of people who are feeling sad or hopeless.
Oh, that would be wonderful, and that's what the intention is. And I want to thank you so very much. From the bottom of my heart, to help me to spread the word and you know, get this beautiful piece of art out there.
Absolutely, and again, keep in mind when number 2 and 3 books come out.
Stay tuned.
I want to know how it goes. So thank you again.
We're all coming back to life in a new way.
Yay! Okay, well, thank you again.
But you're gonna have to go through book 1 to figure that one out.
Well, hey, you know, sometimes you have to go through the storm in order to get that rainbow. So okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much again.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Adele Paula Royce, and we've been talking about her new book, The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes. Again, her book is available from Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link to her book there in the show page description, as well as in the description is a direct link to Adele's website, AdelePaulaRoyce.com. Again, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.